I read a very, very interesting article, which, quite frankly, in reading it, I was amazed at the statement that came out. It was actually from the most recent computing magazine. Now, computing over here is a magazine that is for big business, tends to be more for big business rather than the smaller business. And it was from an article entitled BT Has Designs on the Domestic IT. And it talks about the house of the future being here today. And it was written by a lady called Emma Nash, who was actually talking to the researchers at BT, at British Telecom. And it says, if industry experts are to be believed, our use of technology will change more in the next 10 years than it has in the past 150 years. And it goes on, it says, we're on the brink of a digital explosion where our lives will become increasingly networked and the internet will be playing a growing role. BT is spending £10 billion creating what it calls the 21st century network. And when this network is completed in 2009, BT will have converted its entire backbone network to IP, making the network environment a far more viable option and leaving business and consumers no choice other than to go digital. And it goes in to explain what the view is. And the view is that literally everything is going to be connected. Your clothes, when you buy your clothes, there will be a chip inside the clothes. When you buy your food, there will be a chip, not necessarily in the food, but in the packaging that was there. Your fridge will have readers. Your washing machine will have readers. Your cupboards will have readers. It talks about a new occupation, which is, they call it digital plumbing. Basically, underneath the stairs, there will be the basic equipment, and you'll have a digital plumber that will come and connect all these bits and pieces together in the proper way. This wireless network that we had here, we were fighting with before services today, is part and parcel of the direction in which everything is going. There's another article I was reading in the same magazine that was talking about how they are currently undergoing trials of 2 gigabyte broadband. Now, we have here 2 megabyte broadband. In fact, if it's a megabit, but is it 2 gigabyte? That's another 1,000 times faster than what we have at the moment. And that will allow the television, which again will have readers and everything else. The whole thing is on the cards to transform our life, according to what it's saying, more in the next 10 years than in the last 150. And when we look at the last 150, it is an astounding change that's taken place. In fact, in the last 150, we've moved from the Industrial Revolution, basically, the tail end of the Industrial Revolution, into what we have today. And certainly when you're looking at the way, in fact, our lives have been altered. I mean, let's just turn over to Daniel chapter 12. And just remind ourselves of the very sign of the end time over in Daniel chapter 12. It says in here, because Daniel was absolutely perplexed as to what he was seeing, what he was being told. And in verse 4 of Daniel 12, it says, you, Daniel, shut up the words, seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many will run to and fro, and knowledge will be increased. And if there are two things, the communications and science are the two ingredients of this end time, which we can see. And this is just taking it that next stage. And as they say, it will be even more. Technology will influence our lives even more than it has in the last 150. So you're looking at this communications and science where everything is going to be networked. You will have hundreds of devices within the normal home, which will be communicating with each other. The interesting thing is that the view that God has and the view that God had for the end time, as far as what we will in fact be witnessing at the end time, I just downloaded a part of Churchill's speech, which he made on June the 18th, 1940. And I'd like to just read you this one paragraph. It says, Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. He's addressing the British people at this particular time. And it was a crucial time. It was a time of the Battle of Britain and that time. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be free and the life of the world may move forward into broad sunlit uplands. But if we fail, the whole world, including the United States, including all that we've known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age, made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science. Now, Hitler was using science. That's what they were battling against. It was the beginning of this, of what we're reading here in Daniel 12. And it says, let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties and so bear ourselves that, if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour. Now, this was probably one of the most memorable speeches that Churchill gave, as he saw what was actually coming. And we do have today something similar. Certainly here, when we're looking in Daniel 12, the knowledge, it talks about here as knowledge shall be increased. The word there, if you want to actually know where that is first used, it's used back in Genesis 2, at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And this knowledge being increased, it depends which way this knowledge is going to go. Because certainly, if you turn over to 2 Timothy 3, turn over to 2 Timothy 3 with me for a minute. Verse 1. In the last days, perilous times shall come, or times of stress will come. For men shall be lovers of themselves, covetous, boasters, proud. So the problem is the direction of thought, the way in which our thinking is going, which is incoming total selfishness. And based because of that, it goes then down into without natural affection. All these other things flow from this concept. Truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, sexually corrupt, fierce despisers of those that are good, traitors, headstrong, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. And we can see all these things within our society today. And it's coming from a frame of mind. Now, it says here, it says, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. And it goes into verse 7, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. And here again, you're looking at the word knowledge. And the knowledge here is a word, epinosis. Now, gnosis, it means knowledge. And epi means, like we have an epicenter. If we've got epicenter of an earthquake, it's the surface part where the earthquake may be mile down, but the epicenter is the surface part. It's the part above the earthquake itself. And that is the point above the earthquake. And it literally means over. So epinosis means over knowledge. It's the learning, it's the understanding, it's the structured knowledge. And never learning, and never able to come to the knowledge, the over-knowledge, the true knowledge. Knowledge of good and evil, yes, but it's the tree of life. That's what he's talking about here. And when we turn over to Romans 1, we see again this same word, epinosis, being used. And here in Romans chapter 1, it's used in verse 28. It says, and even as they did not like to retain God in their epinosis, in their overknowledge. Now, what the inference is it is in their education. It is in their structured knowledge. It is in their scientific endeavors. So because they're not keeping God in the picture within this technology that we see today, as I say, just reading the article in Computing Magazine, we're going to have technology in these next 10 years, if things carry on, greater than the last 150. This is the result. They didn't like to retain God in their structured knowledge. God gave them over to a reprobate mind. It is a twisted, deviant type of mind. They're deviant in every way. To do those things which are not proper. Not proper as far as God is concerned, not according to God's knowledge. being filled with all unrighteousness and lawlessness. And we've just been seeing what's happened over in France. I mean, it is a form of lawlessness. Fornication or porneia, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters. And on it goes, giving this list of things, which is coming from the knowledge structure being corrupted. Now, the reason why I take some time to bring that out before reading some of these other articles that I've got, I'd like to read for you an article that appeared this last Monday in the Telegraph, and it says, Labour isn't wicked, but it's doing just what the Nazis did. And it's true. It really, really is true. And it's true, the last bit's true. But in fact, Labour is wicked. Labour has taken, Labour, Conservative, Liberal, whatever, the world as a whole, Parliament as a whole, the way the world is going, has taken its over-knowledge, its structure of knowledge, from the wrong tree. And because of that, it's going to flow into a certain direction. And God knew that it would. This is why he said, you know, this is the identifying sign of the end. The end time is that knowledge will increase, and many will rush to and fro. You're going to have this communication. And it says here, imagine we had really bad government. I mean, morally bad, wicked, a government that wanted to do something terrible, like abduct children from their families or introduce euthanasia of disabled babies. It couldn't happen, right? We wouldn't let it, would we? This government isn't morally bad. For all its frequent cock-ups, our ministers are well-intentioned, trying to do the right in their own lights. Just now, they find themselves caught out in a secular equivalent of simony, the sale of offices and indulgences for cash. And it goes into this section about, you know, buying peerages, which is being commented in. It says, the real fault of this government is not its shady dealings. It is there before us on the mantelpiece in the laws that Labour is passing. Where are these laws coming from? They're coming from an overknowledge, from a view which is wrong. Tyranny is sidling in. It is entering with face averted, under cover of a host of laws whose ostensible purpose is the reverse of their actual effect. The Human Rights Act, for instance, was presented as a means of defending the individual against oppression by the state. Similarly, the European Charter of Fundamental Rights, whose stealthy insinuation into British law the government is conniving at, gives us all entitlements to social and economic protection. But these charters comprise sweeping generalizations whose confusion give judges the power to create legal precedents. Their effect is to swell the remit and responsibility of the state. Now, what we need to understand is what God has said. These laws are going to be used, and they're going to be used against the people of God. And as we watch the news, we must be aware that this is actually what's happening. The old principle of equity and tort law, by which private individuals could accommodate their interests to each other in a natural and rational manner, is giving way to a system of arbitrary and artificial power. Ministers evidently believe that our identities can be protected only if they are owned by ministers themselves. For ID cards will not belong to us, but to the state. Now, that's what we need to understand. The state is going to own the ID. We've got to pay for them. We've got to pay our £80 or whatever it is when we get a passport. But the ID card will belong to the state. The Home Secretary will be able to revoke any individual's card at any moment by the touch of a Whitehall button. Now, what does that mean? Cut off from all the transactions in which freedom consists. In other words, you can't buy, you can't sell. And notice it says, it's not an exaggeration to say that the National Identity Register will give the government both knowledge of and control over your life. A photo of your face, your fingerprints, a scan of the back of your eye, will be recorded, as well as 49 separate pieces of information, including your residence and your religion. Could it be that they ask, what day do you worship on? Because, you know, you've got to be careful about the Muslim threat. And it comes under this kind of inference. This kind of, and what we're looking at, remember, what we just read in this other isolated report in Computing Magazine, the technology is going to change in the next 10 years greater than in the last 150 years. Now, if the home is going to be computerized and networked to the degree in which they're wanting to computerize and network it, what do you think is going to happen to our cities, to our cars, to our road systems? The same thing will happen. You put in an identity card, and the technology, again, you've got to go ahead and purchase the identity card. You've got to have this identity card with this electronic technology built into it, that at the moment, you've got to be close to a some kind of device to have it scanned. You have to run it through like a card reader. But we're talking about technology moving forward. We're talking about being able to scan these things remotely. As you walk down the street, as you walk through a door, you've got to have an identity card with you at all times. You must carry it. And they can know exactly where you are at all times of the day and night. That is... Hitler would have loved it. He would have absolutely have loved it. Stalin would have loved it. And what we're seeing in the society today is this is coming in by the back door. And we are seeing what has been prophesied as far as stamping on people, that the technology is being laid down for this purpose. And it goes on, it says, every outlet, every outpost of the state, and every outlet that operates under licensing from the states, including shops selling cigarettes and alcohol, oh, you've got to be careful not to sell them to minors. So you've got to have your identity cards to put across the counter, and it will come in every transaction. We'll have access to the register. You'll be required to acquire and carry a card proving your identity. The scheme will be compulsory. By the sly device of making us get one when we renew our passports, people will be banned from travelling abroad unless they register. But even within Britain, it will soon be impossible to live a normal life without an ID card. Labour's horrible inversion of logic means that if something can be done, it will be done. Shops and restaurants selling cigarettes and alcohol will find themselves required to demand ID to prove that they have not sold to minors and to log the sale. Banks will jump at the chance to tap into our doings, compiling exhaustive records of our spending habits that they will then sell on to other companies. The alternatives will soon be submission to the corporate Leviathan or setting up a barter economy on a Hebridean island. How on earth are you going to do it? You either go ahead and go down this route, or you go ahead and opt out of society completely. And then there is the Legislative and Regulatory Reform Bill, which is presented as a means of repealing red tape and therefore restricting the reach of the state. But the bill, quite simply, gives any minister of the Crown, notice any minister of the Crown, the power to, quote, make provision amending, repealing, or replacing any legislation. I mean, how on earth does that kind of thing get through? Well, we'll come on to that if we should have enough time. Any legislation, meaning any public general act or indeed any rule of law. It cannot be used to impose taxation or create criminal offences bearing a prison term of more than 2 years, and there is also a cursory requirement for debate in committee. But given that the bill has been nodded through by pliant MPs, even the Conservatives let it by without a murmur, imposing only a one-line whip on the second reading, we cannot place much trust in the vigilance of our politicians. For the final twist of the bill's logic is that it will apply to itself. So this bill, you can actually make an amendment to itself to give total draconian powers. Ministers may use its powers to remove its own limitations and enable the government to make or repeal any law whatsoever. That is what Hitler did. That is exactly, this is what Churchill was talking about. And it is here now. Oh yes, we've got, it says Labour isn't wicked, but it's doing just what the Nazis did. You see, the Nazis came to power as an elected government. They were elected by the people. And what we've got now is we have a new Labour. What is new Labour? It's a new socialism. What is new socialism? It's a nationally based socialism. It's not going off and doing all the various bits and pieces that are all kind of trade union based. It's put that in the past. It's now national based, looking after the national interests. What's another word for national socialism? Nazis. That's what a Nazi is. He's a national socialist. It's not exactly the same. It's like Mark Twain that said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And what we're seeing is the rhyming of a political direction. Where's it coming from? It's not coming from these people. It's coming from another mind, another twisted mind. And we within the church have got to recognize where that mind is and what that mind is actually doing at this present time. And we must not be asleep. We must realise what's going on. He says, a regulatory reform bill is an enabling act identical to the spirit, in the spirit, to the one the Nazis passed in 1933. On that occasion, Hitler promised that the government will make use of these powers only insofar as they are essential for carrying out vital necessary measures. The number of cases in which an internal necessity exists for having recourse to such a law is a limited one. That was Hitler. That is what Hitler said. And, you know, what did Winston Churchill say? He said, look, we're looking at this horrendous force in Europe, made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science. And what are they bringing into the ID card? It is a science, but why perverted? Because it's going in a certain direction. Who is perverting it? It is not human. It is not coming from a human mind. And we in the church have got to understand this. The world is underneath an influence, and it's an influence of Satan the devil. He is going, it's his last fling, let's face it. That's what we're looking at. It's his last fling in a certain direction. Our government says much the same about the legislation that it's passing today. But our concern should not be with today or tomorrow, but with the day after tomorrow, when different, nastier politicians might be in power, and the habits of decency and common sense may have been even further eroded. We've already seen how officious policemen have used legislation designed to deal with terrorists to arrest protesters armed with nothing more lethal than a placard. Now, that's already happened outside the Houses of Parliament. Anybody carrying a placard, they've been arrested under the Prevention of Terrorism Act. And yet they were demonstrating. We've had people thrown out of a Labour Party conference using the Terrorism Act. And what was he, 85, 83 or something? And that was used against him. Perhaps I was wrong when I said that our government isn't morally bad, that it wouldn't abduct children or enforce euthanasia of disabled babies. Already there is legislation going through Parliament to set up state nurseries. Remember? History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. That's exactly what Hitler did. State nurseries, children centres for under fives, and the Royal College is actively campaigning to let babies born under 25 weeks die rather than receive costly intensive care. Both ideas are bad enough, but it's only a small step, a twist in logic of the sort that this government is adept at, and which its laws will make perfectly possible to make state nursery compulsory. And you can see that. You can see that coming. And extend infanticide to babies that are born with defects. Exactly what Hitler did. In the paper today, this morning, there's a headline that says Blair is to launch a new war on the Lords, the House of Lords. And it says Tony Blair is preparing the biggest assault on the powers of the House of Lords for more than 50 years after a series of bruising battles with the peers over Labour reforms. The government plans to change the law to prevent the upper chamber blocking legislation that has been passed by the Commons. Now, the reason the House of Lords exists is to give a balancing chamber to the Commons. Now, he's got the... You know, we just read about this legislation, that he can go ahead and literally overturn any law that he wants without going through Parliament. He's now going to try and basically abolish the House of Lords. That's the aim. Now, what we need to understand... Let me just read a little bit from Alice Thompson. She was writing in Wednesday, this last Wednesday's paper. And she says this. She says, "The House of Lords worked best when peerages were either given out for excellence or in a particular field, or they were passed through the family." Now, there's been this hoo-ha about having peerages bought by making loans to the Labour Party, and not the Conservatives, because they haven't been in power recently. He says, "The hereditaries weren't beholden to anyone. They came from the four corners of the kingdom, so balanced out the metropolitan elite." In other words, they gave the rural voice to the country, which today is being undermined continually. And the rural area is where you actually get the food from, but it seems as if nobody quite realizes that. "And it encompasses the range of age and experience. The working peers include scientists, moralists, senior spies, educationalists, who provided a balance to the religious leaders and former generals. Their breadth of knowledge was astonishing." And each one was specialist in a particular type of field. This is the way the Lords worked. It's worked for hundreds of years, hundreds of years. "Their breadth of knowledge was astonishing, and they rarely abused their expenses." It says, "Their last vestiges remain in the Lords, and they have done an excellent job so far as blocking the government's attempt to force through compulsory ID cards." They've thrown it out. They said, look, this is ridiculous. This is tyranny. And what's happening now is they're trying to undermine this. And the way, it says, "Tony Blair's answer to having packed the House full of cronies and donors is to suggest elections." In other words, if you can't go ahead and get rid of these people that are blocking him at every turn, the first thing to do is to push other people in. Pad it out with as many of his own lords as he possibly can to try and overturn. What I want you to remember, now let's just go over to Amos chapter 3. Amos chapter 3. Because we're looking at this right now. We're looking at these kind of things going on. And here in Amos chapter 3, it says in verse 3, "Can two walk together except they be agreed?" The answer is obviously not. They've got to be agreed. "Will a lion roar in the forest when he has no prey?" And the answer, I don't know much about lions, but apparently the answer is no. "Will a young lion cry out of his den if he's taken nothing? Can a bird fall in a snare upon the earth where there's no gin?" In other words, if there's no snare there, can a bird be snared? Of course it can't. "Shall one take up a snare from the earth and have taken nothing at all in it?" Whereas, do you go and pick a snare up? No, you leave it there so another animal will go into it. "Shall a trumpet be blown in the city and the people not be afraid?" It's just as true. Once the trumpet gets blown, people had better fear. "And there can there be evil in a city and the Eternal has not been involved?" Not done it, not been involved in the process. So each question is lowering down to a certain point. "Surely the Lord Eternal will do nothing, but he reveals his secrets to his servants, the prophets. The lion has roared, so who's not going to fear?" You better fear, because the voice has already gone out. "The Lord Eternal has spoken, who can but prophesy?" What we must do when we are looking at prophecy, when we are looking at the things that are going on in this world today, we have got to look at it through the same eyes as we have been taught. We've been taught to look at the world in a certain way. That teaching did not come from Mr. Herbert Armstrong. That teaching came from the Spirit of God through Mr. Herbert Armstrong. And we have got to use that same spirit, but today, it's in today's world. We're looking at a different set of problems. We're looking at something that's happened. You know, we've lived through a period of time that Mr. Armstrong did not foresee. We are currently living through a period of time that he had no concept that there would be a church in a little room here in Welsh countryside, broadcasting across the world, down to Africa, across to California, all the United States, Canada, Denmark, Norway. I mean, it was inconceivable. Inconceivable. He didn't foresee any of this. But the same principles have got to be applied. Turn over to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. In Matthew 24, in verse 3, he says, "And as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, 'Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of your coming and the end of the world?'" Now, what I want you to notice is there are two signs mentioned there. There's not just one. It's the sign of your coming and the end of the world. Is that the same? There are two events. One is the end, in verse 14, "This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations, and then shall the end come." There's the sign of the end. And in verse 30, "And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and all the tribes of the earth shall mourn when they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven." There's the sign of the Son of Man, the sign of your coming. That sign of your coming is the scroll, the heavens rolling back as a scroll. The sign of the end is the preaching of the gospel in all the world as a witness, which means that the gospel was not preached for 1900 years, then it was preached, and we are now already past that. So we're in this period that we're looking at here, we're in the end period. We're in the area that Daniel was talking about, many shall rush to and fro, and the knowledge will be dramatically increased. This communication of science, we're looking at this particular time. And it says in this, immediately after, where it says this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world for a witness to all nations, then the end will come. It says, "When you shall therefore see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand." And if we just keep our hand in there, go back to Daniel and read and see what it actually says. Here in Daniel, and he says, verse 8, "And I heard, but I understood not." This is Daniel chapter 12, verse 8. "And I heard, but I understood not. Then said I, O my Lord, what shall the end of these things? And he said, You go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up, they're sealed until the time of the end." And it says, at that time of the end, the inference is, "Many will be purified and made white, and tested." And we have gone through a period of testing. We are currently being tested. And notice what he's talking about. He's talking about the shattering and the shattering coming to an end. The shattering comes to an end, all these things will be done. All these things will be finished. But it's a time of testing. The shattering is a time of testing. "White and tried and tested, but the wicked will do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand." And what does it say? "He who reads Daniel, let him understand." Not the wicked will understand, but the wise shall understand. You've got to put Matthew 24 and this section here together. These are the days of Daniel that's being mentioned here. And it's from the time that daily sacrifices were taken away, the abomination that makes desolate, you've got 1,290. And blessed is he that waits and comes to 1,335. Now, 1,335, we understand that they all end at the return of Christ. This is the way we're taught. So it actually starts. The countdown for Christ's coming is at 1,335. We know that. You can virtually say Christ's coming is, it begins from that point, because after, it will not be beyond 1,335 from when that actually takes place. Who are these wise that are mentioning here? Back in Matthew 24, I want you to notice something. It says, "Watch," in verse 42. "Watch, therefore, for you do not know what your hour your Lord does come." And it says here, "Who then," in verse 45, "who then is a faithful and a wise servant?" These are the people. This is the wise that will understand. "He who reads Daniel, let him understand." It is the wise that will understand. Who is a wise servant who his Lord has made ruler over his household to give them food in due season. Now, I'd like to give a sermon on that subject totally, eventually. It's on my shelf at the moment with a few scribblings. But that's the one thing I would like to go ahead and give a sermon on, because that's what we are about today. It is to give food in due season. And it is a wisdom that has got to be there. And it flows right into the next chapter. In the next chapter it says, then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins that took the lamp and went brought forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 were wise, and 5 were foolish. And the wise had oil. They were in contact with God. The relationship they had was a relationship with God, and they were having the Holy Spirit. That is the wisdom. That's where the wisdom comes from. It doesn't come from us. Now, what I want you to notice, though, looking at this and realizing that, hey, 1,335 days is the beginning. That's from that point, that is the start, if you like, of Christ coming. Now, it doesn't mean to say he's here, he's not. But from that point, he's as good as going to be here in 1,335. He will not be beyond that. We know that for a surety. Here in this passage, it talks about... now learn the parable of a fig tree, verse 32 of Matthew 24. When its branches are yet tender and it puts out forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So likewise, when you shall see these things, know that it's near, even at the doors. And it's seeing all the various things that are leading up to this particular time, the time of the fleeing. And it says, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled, which gives an indication that we are in that generation. But of the day and the hour knows no man, but the angels of not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. For as the days were before the flood, they were eating, drinking, marrying, and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark. There is the beginning of the days of Daniel. You know, you're looking at the time when the church flees. From that point, you know the days of Daniel will then tick off and will come to the point of Christ's return, and Christ has got to return by the 1335. And knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. It doesn't mean to say the actual arrival of the Son of Man, it's the entire event that precedes it as well. These days of Daniel, he who reads Daniel, let him understand. Then shall 2 will be in the field, 1 will be taken, the other left. 2 will be grinding at the mill, 1 will be taken, the other left. And if you put your notes, Luke 17:37, it asks, where, Lord? Where are they going to be taken? Wherever the body is, there will the eagles be gathered together. And you're looking at, again, it's talking about the fleeing. But it says, verse 42, watch, be alert, therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord comes. There's going to be a problem. It says in verse 48, if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, in other words, he's not watching, he's not being alert to what's going on, and will begin to smite his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunken, and you know, the wine of a fornication and all the Babylonish ideas, then the Lord of that servant will come in a day when he looks not for him, and in an hour when he's not aware of, and will cut him off, and appoint his portion with the hypocrites, and be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins. But I want you to concentrate on this section here. It says in verse 43, but you know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would have come, he would have watched and would not have allowed his house to be broken up. And our household has been broken up. We can learn from, you know, the wise will learn from what they've gone through within the church. Why? Because it's the same deviant mind that broke the church up. That's why. What happened in the church? What went on with the ministry, with the rulership that was there? Well, Mr. Dekatch put into the ministry a whole raft of local elders. Do you remember that? He doubled the size of the ministry almost overnight. What is happening in the House of Lords? exactly the same thing. It's double, you know, doubling and tripling the size of that house to try and weaken and lessen the effectiveness of that house to stop the legislation going through. We can see that the legislation and the direction of legislation is going the same as Hitler's Germany. And we always imagined that the attack in the church was going to come from outside. That's what we imagined. But it didn't. It came from inside. Now, am I saying that definitely it will come from inside within in the country? I'm not saying definitely, but I'm saying, hey, we better wake up. And we better at least watch. We better be aware that this is a distinct possibility. What we are looking at today, happening in this kind of legislation, is exactly what happened within the church. It is coming from, it's not coming from the labor mind. It's coming from a satanic mind. And we've got to understand that we lived through it. We saw what happens when a satanic mind gets into a place of power. And we are seeing today, in our society, the exact same thing taking place. We've got to be aware of that. I mean, it's not just in the UK. I mean, I'm using the UK as an example, but it's not just in the UK. Here it says, another one, this is from the 15th, Google will have to hand over details of users' internet searches to the United States government after a judge said that the company must comply with federal investigation. So Google, when you go onto the internet and you search for something, what do? You type in what you're looking for, and off it goes, and it gets whatever it is, brings all the search results back. Google stores all that, has a profile of you, knows your IP address, and can also puts cookies onto your, if you've got various parts of Google, it'll put cookies onto your PC, so it knows specifically who is doing that. Now, the government wants that information. Is it any different from ID cards? It's exactly the same kind of thing. Exactly the same kind of thing. Another one here. Teacher's victory over the police who took her DNA. A teacher who was falsely accused of hitting a pupil won damages yesterday after the police took DNA samples and fingerprints from her despite a decision not to prosecute. So she was just accused. But they took their samples. And they were going to go into that database. And that database, it says here, this is from the 5th of January. Freedom fears as the DNA database expands. The government was accused last night of compiling a national DNA database by stealth as police reported a rapid increase in genetic profiling in recent years. And what will that be going into? The identity card. The identity card will have a chip. You're looking at technology which will be greater in the next 10 years than the last 150. And as I say, you're going to have a home that is networked. You will have a street, a car, a motorway, planes, everything will be networked. And if you've got to carry these things, there will be no freedom. None at all. At the flick of a switch, they can turn off and you can buy and sell, switch straight off. The mark of the beast is to do with the keeping of the Sabbath. That's the mark of the beast. But the method of implementation is what we're looking at. And that's what we need to wake up to. We've seen it happen before. We've seen these kinds of things happen before within the church. We are now witnessing what's happening going through the legislation. And I say, we do need to wake up, but we also need to understand that the wise will understand. And who are the wise? Five were wise, five were stupid. Who were stupid? The ones that didn't have the oil. Who were the wise? The ones that were on their knees and in contact with the source of power that is far greater than any ID card. And that is what we have got to do. That really is... I mean, I haven't read a great deal from the news. I don't think there's any real need to. But I do think that having that little bit of extra time allows us to look at the news a little bit more thoroughly and to tie it into with scriptures a bit more and also understand where our strength is. It is only in God himself, and it is essential that we get on our knees. If we are having problems in that area, that we make sure that we fast about it. We're coming up towards Passover. And we need to use these next few days and weeks prior to Passover and prior to the start of a new holy day year, making sure that we are close to God. I don't know how long we've got left. Nobody does. But time is marching on, and we do need to be aware of it.